and he's going to talk about towards the resolution of the CGHS singularity in loop quantum gravity. So go ahead, please.
So thank you very much. So can you hear me good?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So today I'm going to talk about the work we are doing with, in collaboration with Alejandro Ferrici, Aziz Arami, and Juan Daniel Perez from UNAM, and Javier Romero from University de la República in Uruguay. Okay, so slide number 2, please. This is the outline. So we first start by the introduction and motivation of the work, and then maybe we go to a brief review of the CGHS cycle, and then there is studying the classical relation between three parts one and the CGHS. Then the quantization in the last universal state and solving the constraint continuity resolution. And then some other comments at the end. Next study, number 3 and number 4. So, first of all, I should mention that this work is mainly based on the work of Gambini, Pulin, and then Gambini, Pulin, and Almedo for the three plus one expressive symmetry. Okay. They did the same thing for this, this resolution of the singularity in this expressive symmetry model. I should say that there are many similar elements in our work and their work. For example, the kinematical interface is kind of the same. Many of the important results of the physical sector, like most of the things about interface, properties of solutions, etc., are also very similar or sometimes are the same. Also, they found two new observables that we also find here that they are also identical. So, because in many parts of this work, the trajectory or identity plus following the line argument and producing the results, or, producing the results that they write for the CGHS case, one of us really is doing this for the CGHS really useful or interesting or does it have any new use? Next slide, please, number 5. So, first of all, after this, at least our motivation, first note that an important reason for this similarity is the way that we can test CGHS in some similar variables to the virtual curiosity variables of three-person expressive symmetry case. Because of this, the Hamiltonian will become very similar in this organization, and thus it relates to some of our motivations. So then what we're doing is what is useful and interesting. Regarding the previous notes I said, so as soon as we have the results, nice results of Gambini and Pulin and Almedo, we thought that well, it could be applied to the CGHS because we had this similar Hamiltonian. And then we wanted to see actually if it really goes down in the case because maybe we can get from the output but you might not be certain. Then the next item is that although one can get that, you know, you can get the same main result for the CGHS again because of the similarity, nevertheless, it's not completely certain or convincing from the outset until the control is exclusive. Maybe the central important reason of our motivation is that we're planning to follow this analysis for the CGHS in this manner. So it means that we will do some configuration and studying the back correction, etc. It is possible to do. This work that we are doing now, presenting now for the vaccine, this is a good one for the chaotic matter. However, it gives us better understanding of possible challenges and possibilities in the case of the chaotic matter. Next slide, number 6. So, other things that, if you have an interesting result from a loop quantum gravity, why you don't have it for two models instead of one model? Apart from all the CGHS itself is an interesting knowledge. It has like whole solution, hybridization, etc. But it's relatively simple and relatively solvable, even in the presence of matter. So one has to be able to perceive the more in quantization compared to more complicated models. After there are detailed studies and master theorist work, the main result in the literature that my son has commented is quantum gravity analysis of the model after we do this quantum gravity analysis, maybe final conversation, some previous work in some of particularly, for example, the work of Ashkita, Kristelius, and Ravanovic, that was interesting results, very interesting results of evaporation, of the black hole diffraction, asymptotic properties of the space time. But at the same time, it was limited approximation and not consideration is certainly classical, and it was not entirely analytical. So it must be nice to have some analytical results, I mean, about the resolution of singularity in addition to these numerical nice results. Then also, it would be nice to demonstrate these interesting results. So this popular number is actually the variety of results we already have for the CGHS. At the end, there is one note that there are some rather important differences which we mentioned along the way, which makes CGHS is not exactly the same as the plasmon and surface metric system. So some results might have looked the same, but might be conceptually or conceptually different in the sense that the interpretation of some of the results might be different. And maybe it gives us more info. Next is slide number 80. So this is a brief review of the CGHS black hole. CGHS, as I think many of you or all of you might know, is a three-dimensional dilatant model that equation 1 gives it is pure gravitational Lagrangian. Now, here in equation 1 in the Dilakant field, and you see that it's nonlinearly coupled to the scalar curvature and the forum that's brought into the cosmological constant. Now, in conformal gauge and in double node coordinates, you have this form of a metric in double node coordinates and conformal gauge, and the solution, the form of the metric is equation number 2, and the solutions are equation number 3. And there is in equation 3 is a constant of integration that turns out to be the ADM or bonding mass if you calculate at the normal infinity bonding mass or spatial infinity ADM. So in equation number 4, you see the form of the scalar curvature of the CGHS, and it's obvious from 4 that it corresponds to a black hole of mass M that is located at x plus x minus equal m over lambda cubed. Next slide, number 9. So this is the crystal diagram of the vacuum CGHS black hole. You can see that it's very similar to the crystal diagram of the Schwarzschild. These are x plus minus equal 0 are the future and past event horizons, like left and right. The next slide, number 11, we are going to study the classical form of CGHS and the plasmon and the relations and how they can be derived from the general recognition of the latent model. So we are in slide number 11. One can write the most general diffeomorphism invariant action, yet it is an order differential equation for the metric G and the general latency is 5 as in equation 6. Here you see that y5, y of 5 is the function of the Dilakant field, 5 is the Dilakant field here, and y of 5 is the function of the Dilakant field, which is the non-minimal parameter. Then v5 is called the Dilakant potential, and you have the Dilakant kinetic term there, which you can remove it at view if you want for a component transformation. Then in equation 7 and 8, you can see that both CGHS and CGHS function exist in this form, and also, they look very similar, and maybe the main difference might be the form of the electric potential in both terms, in both models. Then, And then just to see that here, I mean, Kanban also is very similar, and that's what we actually start up with singularity to be applied, with singularity resolution methods to be applied to the CDHS almost immediately. Next slide, please, number 12. Now, there is some difference here, although these are very similar models, they look very similar. As you see in the 3 plus 1 in equation in question 10, soil is actually the part of the message that appears in front of the two spheres in the spherical axis, spherical symmetry axis. While in the CDHS, it's truly a distinct blur freedom, it's not present in the message, and it's a scalar field that is not in the potential blur. So if you take the structure at the end in quantization, maybe the representation of operators and interface rates, and especially interpreting the results that we have for this area. Next slide, number 13. We are going to see, in this slide, explain why we did not do the conformal transformation for the CDHS case. So, as you know, for the 3 plus 1 variable, we could make a conformal transformation to get rid of the reduction unity curve. We could do the same for the CDHS, and in fact, all of the analysis that I have seen have done that. But then we decided that at least we can do it without the conformal transformation. Let's do it like that. And well, the main idea was that variables that we have geometry, and there's no need to take a structure at the end, and you know, we can directly execute the variables, and there's no fiducial metric and all that. But it's just a choice. You can choose not to do that and remove the conformal transformation. Next slide, number 14. So here we are comparing a 3 plus 1 and CDHS case, a 3 plus 1 surface metric, the canonical variables. When you write them in separate variables, like monads and one dimensional vectors and monads. You can see that in the left part, for the 3 plus 1 space, it's not the case. The variables we get are xi, which are two variables, are those 1 and 2. That is why the height was, and omega. So omega 1 is the spin connection that is the hypersurface. X, 1, and 2 are the components, actually xi is the, when we started with the dimension formulation, we added the portion free condition multiplied by a Lagrange multiplier to the action. And this is part of the Lagrange multiplier at the beginning, but then we did an integration by parts, and this became one of the variables. So in the left part, you see that we have two, actually three moment parts, T1, T2, and T omega, and T1 and T2 are related to the components of the normal to the special Lagrange surface, and T omega is related to the non-linear coupling term of the electron. Now going to the right part for the CDHS, in this formation we have the same variable, but we have a new variable, which is the Dillaton field, and that's the direct result of the fact that we didn't omit the kinetic term of the Dillaton field, because when you have that d nu phi there, it's the time you have the time derivative of phi there, so it becomes another variable, it's another variable. Now in 13, 14, and 16, you see the canonical momentum, which is variable, and we have a new momentum, which is T5, and you see there. Now, the next item, under the box, you see that it doesn't even do conformal transformation, as I said. The Dillaton kinetic term was present, and so was phi dot, and then phi is a variable. And then equation 14 would be a new final function. So we have a new function for the CDHS. Next slide, please. So we want to now make a triangle transformation for the previous variable and the form of this model to be good about variable. In the left part, you see that after doing this, and we are just transferring to drivers, say X, Y, Z, non-drivers, say file, file, and tuning transition. So, what we did actually, I just want to show how they're related and where does this transformation come from. So from the C++ case, you have this, because from next week you have the drivers, and you just have to kind of educate these relations. As you see in 17, we have this nice relation between P square, which is the norm of P, and P by the canonical time to ISR, that is exponential and exponential in the previous slide. So in 17, you see that you have this relation between P and the determinant of the spatial metric. So first of all, in 18, just kind of rename P omega 3S. And then in 19, this is the update from 17, you can, in 19, it's kind of obvious. And 20 and 21 are also kind of become natural, because you have the number of P, and you don't have P, don't have P, which should be 4 times the determinant metric, and you have that, and that's kind of very natural for models. Now, if you follow the trend line, educated yes for the CDHS, it comes automatically, very naturally. You use the score of the metrics, the score of the determinant of the you use the determinant of the spatial metrics, and then you have the 23, which is just naming of the momentum of the internet, the spatial interaction, and then 24 is evaporated, and 25 and 6 come from again 22, as the same way that we have for the next slide, please. So now after this transformation, we have these variables. In the left box, we are left only with K5 and P5, and I have not written theta and theta because, as I say in the next, okay, in the left box, we measure K system of theta equal 1, and this this together with the Gauss constraint, at second class we can fix the Gauss constraint because of that. And so we have fixed theta and from Gauss constraint we found 2 eta and then those curves are down. And then you get the 28, which is the Hamiltonian of the stable constraint system, last multiplied by Hamiltonian or stable constraint, and shift multiplied by the normal constraint. In the left, in the right box, you see that we have kind of the same pair of canonical variables, but we have phi and phi in addition to K8 and K5. Now, the moment that is especially really related that EX is not really a monad, one of the triad of monads. It is less, but the name of the format is just similar. Is the name of this variable. So again, we make a K16, we arrive at 30, which is last shift, sorry, Hamiltonian constraint, which is a Hamiltonian constraint, but we have that new constraint that we saw in the previous system. Now, because of this K16 that we did in the right side, we see that K is actually the extinct connection of the special hyper in the special hyper surface, which is not the case in the C++. And so this is kind of important point to have in mind. Okay. So the next slide, number 17. Since we have this new constraint, we have to preserve it. And this leads to another constraint, which is called alpha. And it turns out that alpha and mu are second class together, so we have to proceed with the standard to achieve the second class system. We solve the DC constraints, so we find phi and phi from them, and so we don't have phi and phi in the element mode that are written in terms of other variables. Now also we should introduce direct process and follow by the direct process. And as you see in, for example, 36, the direct process do not have the so-called standard form, like, for example, Kx and K5 should be 0 in the standard form. But we don't have this here. It makes calculations a little bit complicated. But we have kind of a resolution for this. In the next slide, number 18, the total Hamiltonian in here, as you see in 39, is after doing this second class procedure, is now you are left with antenna constraints and geometrical constraints, lots and shifts. In equation 40, you see the experimental curves that appear in the dimension now. And in equation 41, is what I said before, we introduced this new variable, sorry, US instead of KS. And just for introducing that, you see in 42 that the direct bracket becomes turning the standard for creating, I mean, very useful for the calculation if you don't have a weight children. Next is slide number 19, please. So the next step is because we want to prepare the deviations for the direct quantization. So we have to turn the algebra to function to the algebra. What we do is by returning back and shift, first we restrict shift in the way in equation 43, then we restrict that in equation 44. And what it does is that as you see in 45, in equation 45, it leads to the Hamiltonian constraint to become a total derivative of the studio. So one can just integrate it by part and you have just three tensors instead of more than one. So in equation 46, you see that this condition that we have, the total derivative, the Hamiltonian constraint being a total derivative, this leads to equation 46, which means that the derivative of Hamiltonian constraint itself is strongly zero. And thus, now in equation 47, we have the algebra, as you see. Because we have the first two from before and the second one, the Hamiltonian constraint itself, now zero, and then the direct quantization can be pursued. Okay, but question 20, please. Now, the one last step is that before quantization is to prepare the Hamiltonian constraint in a form that is suitable for quantization. So we integrate it by part, as I said before. You get an endor sign, endor as the restate lab, and then you integrate by part, get the primer, you rename it to n, and you scale n by this, the second line of c, this one. Then you get an a that is suitable for our processes, for example, operator over in the representation, in 48. The g on that you see there is the third term in the bracket. This appears because of the holding of the boundary condition for the last for the Hamiltonian function to be differentiable, functionally differentiable. And that comes from there. Just to be complete, we put the 49, we put the format which has some Hamiltonian function that can be used for the work. And since there are empty letters, but there are some, you cannot see from the aspect that exactly the same results are going to be there. Okay, next slide please, number 22. So here we have the quantization procedure. As I said before, the deviations and the same correspond in this case are identically the same. The interfaces, of course, from, in the beginning we had some doubts and EX is actually not the trial or not the monad, it's a dilatancy. And classically it's dilatancy, it's the square of the dilatancy. And thus it's not completely obvious that you can follow the standard kind of this quantization with it. But nevertheless nothing is going to follow from polymerization of the field. So we take this polymerization in K5, as you see the first item. Then in place of cylindrical functions are as the graph, in the K representation or K and U representation of this will be equation 60. You see the first item on the right hand side is the normal algorithm along the edges. And then the second one is the functional and then it's well, control is naturally associated with the vertices and the normal ones to the edges. Here the KJ is the color of the edges and the media is the color of the vertices And second, in our final problem, we are using this new J, which is to state values in the R. So we have this, we are dealing with quadratic or periodic functions or almost periodic functions. And that means that we are dealing with non-separable integers. So I think we could say that the tree is well. In order to see what is our tree the tree found in the city that the polynomial is the space of polynomial is the tree, but the polynomial is where the functions are with for compactification of the real line with its natural invariant measure, the Hall measure, the Bohr measure. And then for the normal polynomial we have these are the length of space of the funnel function, smaller or square. And there is some values, as we know, there is the original three down to some n. That is the original. And then the whole space would be 51. This is the year square of the space. Now, to choose our space space, as you see, the graph item. This is a state of the graph with K and mu and n. Next slide is the unit thesis. So now let's see what is the inner product. The inner product is kind of again the same in the kind of general in many of these models. This is the case. So the inner product defined in the graph G can be regarded as a inner product is support and larger graph G bar. Because it can assign trivial levels to the edges and vertices which are not created in G, and that gives you G bar. Then we can for the inner product of this G and to the graphic graph G and G prime for the inner product we can get G bar, which is the union of these two graphs. And then the inner product we can define the CP2. So basically these two graphs should be identical if they should and as you see here. As if you want to get a question in a process. We're going to discuss in this week. Now, next slide is 124, please. Okay, the next step is representing the operator. Again, CGHS and 3+1 are very similar, but again, in CP4, there is a caution in that CX again is not the trial, classically, say, the Sibylla process. So because of the canonical combination relations that we have, we can choose this representation CP3, CP5, and you know if far as the density, so you have a delta here of delta there, and M is a multiplicative an operator, and you can see that the graph has a role also. So as I said, the next item, M is the graph has a role on the boundary associated to the mass of the black hole. Also, we have an operator in GCC associated to the Hallerman that appears in the Hamiltonian constant. And what it does is that if you see that there's a point x in the GCC and x on the point x. So if point x coincides with the place of the vertex, it just shifts the coverage of this vertex by plus or minus n rows. But if it is not in here on the vertex, it doesn't act on the vertex, it gets into vertices, it produces a new vertex between the vertices mu j and mu j plus. Next slide, number 25. So, again, back to the presentation. So, data I don't think that, again, in the PGH case, ECH is actually the square of the Dilakon case, and you should have info about that, while in this last one is actually the trial component for your trial, and have information about them. And again, I say that you have to be careful about the interpretations and assigning some results, and basically, if you're using some results. Next, slide number 26. Okay, so we arrive at the form of the Hamiltonian quantum Hamiltonian constant. We adopt this overview and this kind of presentation. And you see that the first item in CPA, the first term in CPA, is the theta operator, which is the most motivated by their previous endocrine plasmology, for example, cell, we mentioned one of these here. It acts by means of medicinal operator, which relates to the N5, as I said before. And in 60s, you see that you can use a picture of the composition to give 61 and 62 about T5 of a color 1/4 and finally T5. Now, in this case, we also have a disease 1/5 in the last cell. And in the next slide number 27, you see that we can, as always, can use the Kiemann strips, version 63, to prevent it. You just directly have 63 and just promote them to the operator. And the third attack is version number 64, which is 1/5. So without using hands, we can go ahead and solve transferrin function. In slide number 28, you see the action of transferrin function on a basis vector at the kinematic interface place. Now this gives us 65. Now the general form of this is very similar to the one that you can derive for 3+1. It's standard, you can get that, but not, well, we were not exactly sure that this is because the calculation is exactly the same because of the polynomial characteristic that we mentioned. But anyway, FDOS plus and F minus of 1565 are slightly different with lots of, I haven't written the details of that in what you have inside them. But there is a difference with 3+1, but the following comments remain the same for both of these. First of all, you can see that the first item after 65, version 65, you can see that the whole thing is multiplied by KJ. So if KJ vanishes, then the whole bar can start vanishes, and basically you have an identity. Also, if plus minus and F0 have this property that mu J, if you have mu J equal 0, then all of these three vanish. So basically, as I said, these are the same models. These properties are the same to the same as the symmetric case. So basically, if you have mu j equal to 0 or kj equal to 0, both of them equal to 0, if you find that trivial, this is an analytic. Let's call the space with this property, the last item on the first lineage, because this case g and 0, which is signed as a generic notation for the space with k or mu equal 0. Next slide, number 19. So here comes the individual resolution. So this is space that you mentioned, g and 0. They are common. So what we saw that previously is that they are just kind of trivial, they did an identity there. So this, all these means that we can decouple them, but also by means of group operation at the end. And then the physical interest is going to be decoupled from that, they would not be present in the physical interest. And the physical interest will be on the left at the counter or permanent complement of these states. And so we don't have this is on one, we don't have this on the physical interest. On the other hand, the question 56 gives us the value of the for the CDHS model, which is proportional to the square root of the Taylor-Hunter metric, and that is the integral of that. But that is proportional to E file, and then just E file. So you have this new J there. And you can see that since the physical interface does not contain any space with new J or KJ, new J is for zero, because new J is more important for us here, then there is no similarity space present in the quantum. So this is also the way that the convenient tuning do it. That in 3+1 also you have the square of KJ in the long window, so you don't have that. Slide number 30. So we have found the properties of the solution, but again, it shares this into the achievement 3+1. So we are assuming that the states that are annihilated by the quantum independent constraints belong to the dual of the space of three-dimensional functions. We can write them like this, as you see. slide here is related to the or analog of the Cotage math wave function, and chi is just an arbitrary function on the kinematic energy of the space is finite norm. And then you have the slide here. The action of the Hamiltonian constant, quantum Hamiltonian constraint on B, as you see in the second argument, this gives a special equation, one for each vertex, one for each region, which you can see is equal to 6A. Now, because of what you can have this natural decomposition that is in 69, and as you see here, and maybe from previous equations, for example, from 65, but up here, this action, and the last item in page 30, these actions are not just different graphs, because the subspace associated with the given graph is traversed by the action of the Hamiltonian rotator constraint, such that non-new vertices are created. So, make a slide number 30, don't you? So, looking at the equation 65, which you can find in slide 28, you see in 65, in equation 65, in slide 28, that you have this Hamiltonian constraint mixes these three states, mu plus 4j and mu minus 4j. Let's go again to the slide 31. So, from there, you can see that the angular action of H, first of all, the color of H is preserved. And then the color of H is mixed, but it's mixed in the area it's mean the different operator of the set 4 row in the area of the color of the vertex. So I see again from there, from 55, the question 55, that the Hamiltonian constant only mixes the state to support in the latitude of the area of the J new gauge that have a set of 4. After the function x plus 1, we haven't written the form there, but there is also a function interval 0 to minus plus 0, respectively, x plus 1 should be minus 0 to minus 0, x minus the other way, and that's also the sine function that appears in the x plus x minus. The sign of FGN functioning. So because of this, item number 3, you see in slide number 31, because of this, the different orientation of the level in UJ are decoupled. Also, the other thing that item number 4, that the solution is first begun because of this, I'll tell you here, the solution is first begun in subspace, it supports on the same messages. New J equals epsilon J plus minus 4 angle, which N now belongs to the natural numbers, and epsilon J goes from 0 to 4 row. And because of this last item, the function unrelated space belonging to separate solid spaces of kinematic hours physicists, which is kind of happens often in the quantum cosmology. So, slide number 32. So, this is the work, the details that remain to, you know, be understood more, and you know, maybe actually a little bit the evolution, or I mean, this is also the warm-up again for the chasing method. So, I think to complete the analysis of this part for the Hamiltonian constraint, you can apply the group algorithm to the aforementioned state to find the solutions of the constraint. And you see here, this is the group algorithm, which is the Hamiltonian constraint. The exponential you see in equation 70, lambda a to j, where the cj is the different operator appearing in the Hamiltonian constraint. Also, as you know, group algorithms are induced in a near product, so then we have a near telekinetic state. Slide number 33, the other thing after that is that then we should find the geomorphic invariant subspace of the primitive state, and this is achieved by the group algorithm now, which is taking the geomorphic function. Now, as you see, to find the physical state, we should use both of the symmetries and some of the scalars of the symmetries and the geomorphic symmetry. So, this is the last step that we should do. This strategy of of averaging to start the chromosome inviting stain, obviously, and also again, this is a natural immune product and the resulting vector is based on this space. Now, in the CGHS, I should mention there is only one dimension, a special dimension in the CGHS. So because of that, the deformation function average the space and the only available, which we call the radial direction. And because of that, the resulting space of the deformation in the space will be given by linear combination of spin networks with vertices in a possible position along the radial line. Now, then, as usual in the quantum graph, the corresponding deformation in the space, the basic state of that space would be the class of deformation invariant graph. In each class, you can characterize the graph by current and current of edges and vertices. And this space, as you know, the power of epsilon. It's not this space. Slide number 30-40. There are also, in this slide, I'm going to mention two new algebras that is originally derived by Dantin and Kui. The first example is that the position of the vertices of the deformation of the vertices is preserved in the sense that you cannot pass these vertices past. And pass each other, but this is one dimension and we don't have to think about it. The next thing is that the cutting of the edges and the order of the vertices is also preserved, as you see before. So we can identify two new strictly quantum observables in the box and the strictly quantum that are going to take them in the classical theory related to this about these two previous points. First of all, it's kind of simply the number of vertices of the graph, because I'm a general function, if you remember, it didn't create any results. So, in terms of one, you see that this is n of v, which acting on the physical space gives you just the number of vertices of the graph of that space. And there's another one, which we call hope, which is associated to the order of vertices in the graph. You can define it like this. This would be a function of between 0 and 1, and divided by the parameter between 0 and 1, which is over here. And then if it acts in a physical space, it gives you basically the integer part of the, you see the color of the integer part of the in the. So this is another observable that we have both in C++ and CGHS. So next slide, please. This is the summary. So as we saw, as a result of the value we have chosen for the CGHS, this kind of observable variable for the CGHS, the Hamiltonian constant, or the full Hamiltonian actually, is in a very similar form to the C++ symmetric. Not computational, but very similar. This allows us to extend the work of continuous measures to the vacuum case, and this allows us to resolve some numerical situations and obtain new observables that also are present in the physical function. Now, many of the aspects of the analysis are similar or identical to the quantum case, as you saw, as I mentioned before. But there are also some mathematical and some conceptual issues that we should understand better ourselves in our group. Also, again, as I mentioned before, there are some important differences, especially related to the Diophant field, not the metric. But then there are maybe some possibilities there. The work by Christian Frank, they say that the area for growth in the cases coupled to the Diophant field, minimally, you have 1 plus 5 or 5 squared, spectrum of the area would be one over by four. So, I mean, this is kind of a really big subject case here in PhD. And the last item on slide 35 is that now this is our main hope, that we're going to apply this to the two-day big methods with our local assembly warm-up. And this is the first, you mentioned the challenges, some of the challenges. This is more complicated for several reasons, many of them. But among them is the maybe the most often visible and obvious one is that the problem of the current constraint is such that when you have nothing, you can nothing to do but cause your unemployment constraint, the gravitational cost. So that's more challenges, they're more complicated. And then the representation and ordering of these in quantum relativity will be much more involved. So thank you very much.
Questions?
I have a question. I'm confused about the this global M degree of freedom, because it seems that you first introduced it in the quantization section. I'm wondering what's conjugate to it. Do you need this M to reconstruct the metric from the other variables? I just was interested in some clarification. What? Sorry. When you introduced the quantization, you introduced this part of your kinematical Hilbert space involves this global degree of freedom M. And when you summarize the classical canonical theory, I didn't notice this this global M degree of freedom. And I was just wondering where this came from exactly.
But the M actually came from, as I kind of mentioned, if it comes from the boundary condition, I mean, if you want the Hamiltonian, classical Hamiltonian to be functional differentiable, then it turns out that you have to add an eternity at infinity. Which is turned out to be Gn, or N and Ngn. So in classical name, that comes from the...
Okay.
Other questions? If not, let's thank the speaker again.